The Plain Talking Podcast with Geffen Russell Jones.
Hello and welcome to this Christmas and New Year edition of Plain Talking. This podcast explores the life of faith in different ways. We'll hear from two ministers who serve in Bethesda, a rural parish in North Wales. We'll also find out about a faith museum that has recently opened in the northeast of England before Brother David Jardine takes us into the mystery of prayer. Bethesda is a small town in the foothills of Eryri, Snowdonia. I recently caught up with two local ministers from different denominations to talk about their work and their preparations for Christmas and the New Year.
My name's Reverend Sarah Roberts. I'm a community chaplain focusing in Bethesda in North Wales. I'm not the vicar here in Bethesda, which is something I need to kind of keep trying to explain to people. So there is a vicar for Bethesda and the surrounding churches, and he has oversight over those churches, is a vicar. The Bangor Diocese licensed me here to be a new role, which is just being trialled, really, kind of like a pilot thing, as a community chaplain, to work more in the community. So that's what my role is here. I'm trying to do things a little less crazily this year, but Christmas is always really busy. And the last couple of years were incredibly busy, as it is for all clergy at this time of year. But I think this year I've tried to just take things a little slower, maybe do fewer things, and have more time for reflecting and thinking on what it means to be in Advent and what waiting and preparing actually looks like and preparing for Christmas. So this year, recently I started a new service, a midweek thing in the evenings. We call it the Rawr Aur, the golden hour, and it's a quiet hour. It's mostly silence, lots of beautiful music and some reflection, but the focus is on people being able to be silent for a while, and it's in candlelight. And so we've done that for a while this year. And then in Advent, I've changed it to focus on the themes of Advent to give people that opportunity to just come and be still and think about what Advent means, that waiting, the anticipation and the preparation. So we're doing that through Advent. And then I've created this little treasure hunt for the kids in the area. I asked local people if they could make stars. So people have knitted me stars. People have made them out of felt and ribbon and glittery wire. And a gentleman has made some out of plywood for me. And they're moving around the high street in different locations so that the children can find them. And then the idea is that they bring them on Christmas Eve to the crib service. And then we can decorate the tree and I can talk to them about, you know, the journey following the star to the crib and everything like that. So that's happening. So Christmas Eve, we've got three services. We've got the 11 o'clock service in the morning is going to be our nine lessons and carols, traditional carol service. The crib service at 4, which is for children, young people, and the young at heart. And then our 7 o'clock is our Christmas Eve communion. So that'll be quite a busy day on Christmas Eve. But other than that, I think it's a little quieter this year.
My name's Neri Griffiths, and I've been a minister since the 1st of January this year. So being a minister has been a bit of a challenge this year. Everything's new and having to do more sermons. That's one thing. But yeah, it's been a challenge getting to know people and seeing how all the churches went, because that's totally new. Like seeing how the cost of keeping a church and how everything works. Yeah, it's been quite a challenge, but I'm enjoying it. Christmas, really, you know, it's one of my favourite time of the year. I love Christmas. And going to the service yesterday at Llandrig, had the sacrament. And in the night, we had in Caethro Christmas carols singing, people taking part. And then the same in Bethesda, and listening to the talents that are available and the choir and everything like that. It was just wonderful. And it just lifts you up. And, you know, I think it's just to remind people, you know, the feeling they get on Christmas, that they can feel like that throughout the year. It's just a wonderful, wonderful feeling being a Christian. And, you know, even though this year was hard for me and my family, because I lost my mother this time last year. And, you know, just sitting there listening to music gives you hope. It gives you that feeling you can carry on because he's with you always. And I think that's what the church needs to show people, is that you can have that feeling, you can have that hope. And that's going to be a challenge in January. But I'm looking forward for my second year. And I think it's wonderful as well, because I have a teamwork behind me, and I've got a good team behind me helping me to move things and support me. So that makes a lot of difference.
Jonathan Ruffer is the founder of the Faith Museum, a new project based in Bishop Auckland. Jonathan is a successful stockbroker, but his own faith has been the driving force behind this pioneering venture. I began by asking Jonathan to describe what a faith museum is.
Well, it seems perhaps rather surprisingly to be the only example of what I had imagined to start with would be a genre. I've been roundly ticked off for calling it a faith museum, because it evidently should have a much more elevated and aspirational name. But it is about faith, and it is a museum. So that's why we called it that. I had a rather romantic idea originally that a non-ecclesiastical building, which nevertheless had housed the Christian impulse for 1,000 years, might like to house a museum about faith. And it's taken 10 years to happen, which I think is a testament to the fact that basically we've undertaken an impossibility. So I think that's how I define it. It's an impossibility that has been encouraged into life.
I guess people listening might think, well, faith is a private matter, or it's intangible, it's something you feel or believe. But a museum suggests objects and maybe works of art or religious artifacts. Talk us through, if I were to come there today, what I'd find.
Well, I wish I'd met you 10 years ago, because you've exactly put your finger on the issue. What's a museum for? A museum is there to come and gawp at things. And God is not easily gawped at. And what people think about God and what they believe in is not easily looked at either. And if you're telling the history of a phenomenon, that means a timeline, and you can't see a timeline either. So the only thing that we have are objects, and the objects are, of course, a witness to people's faith. And it's proved to be a remarkably powerful way of addressing faith in all its aspects. I think of it rather like the mythical deck chair on the Titanic. Why should a simple deck chair be such a powerfully resonant object? And the answer is that our minds are able to take in and imagine the circumstances that very simple objects have been witness to. And certainly, I think the most powerful things in the museum are the simple things. I mean, we've got some extraordinary, important artifacts, but to a certain extent, they take you into the world of ordinary museums. So where we've got a great picture, where we've got a finely tooled gold religious bijouterie, that's somehow too hoity-toity for this elemental encounter with something that we can't see by brothers and sisters who are as ordinary as I am.
And I'm assuming, Jonathan, that it's described as a museum of faith. So that suggests that it's not one particular faith or any specific faith. You're really trying to encompass many other faiths apart from Christianity, or?
Yes, I'm very gaudy, but I didn't think really in party political terms. It seems to me that the thing that changes us is when we are confronted with something bigger than ourselves. So we have picture galleries, we have a miners' art gallery and a Spanish gallery, and these have very striking effects on people because beauty is bigger than we are. I've always felt that Christianity is the undiluted encounter with the true God. And for me, that's like looking firmly and unblinkingly at the sun. It can't be done without excruciating pain and damage to oneself. And the beauty of art, I see as the light of the moon. Mm. Now, it caresses, it wounds, it gives you a sense of comfort. And yet we know from science that the light of the moon is actually the light of the sun. And therefore, I can't tell any difference. It seems to me theologically to try to distinguish between the light when you look at the sun and the light when you look at the moon, that is splitting theological hairs to me. I don't have any difficulty in throwing my arms open and saying, and discover with me as a fellow seeker of those things that are bigger than I am. And I have no doubt at all that I'm not compromising my personal Christian faith in going on that journey with people. Bishop Auckland has, as the name would suggest, a bishop's palace. It was created as part of the creation of the Prince Bishops of Durham. The bishopric of Durham saw, when it was created, the only Prince Bishop that England has known. And they were incredibly powerful. They could mint their own money, they could call a parliament, they could raise an army. They were viceroys, really. They had full regal powers of this region. And Durham Cathedral was their playpen, and Durham Castle was where they lived. That's now part, that's Durham University. And they had their country seat, which was originally a hunting lodge, at the palace at Auckland. Now, that is what we have, and it is in the palace at Auckland that the Face Museum happens.
And how does this work, Jonathan? Is it open throughout the year, every day, or is it only open occasionally? Or
It actually closes for 6 weeks in January and February, so it's not a case of hurry, hurry, while stops last. You can come on the slow boat, but it's open 5 days a week, closed Monday, Tuesday, but for the other 10 months of the year, it's open all the time, and there's a warm welcome for those who come.
And finally, Brother David Jardine speaks about ordinary people and their extraordinary prayers.
It may well be that you have never heard of two sisters, Peggy and Christine Smith. Peggy was 84 years old and blind. Her sister Christine was 2 years younger, but almost doubled up with arthritis. They lived in a small cottage on the Isle of Lewis in the Hebrides. For months, they and others had been praying that God would bring spiritual revival to that part of Scotland. The books I have read about them say that Peggy and Christine were praying night and day. In 1949, their prayers were answered. Revival came to the Hebrides. Thousands of lives were transformed, and the 1949 Hebrides revival is still considered today to be one of the great revivals in the history of the Christian Church. What inspires me about it, and really encourages me, is that it was largely brought about by the prayers of two sisters in their 80s with major health difficulties. They were very ordinary people, but they prayed night and day, and God used them in an extraordinary way. The history of the church is full of examples of God using the prayers of ordinary people to do marvelous things. I know a man who believed implicitly in the power of the prayers of ordinary people. His name was Frank Laubach, an American. Frank was a congregational minister. He became famous for the way in which he practiced the presence of God, stayed in touch with God all of his waking hours, and taught others to do the same. In 1951, Frank wrote a book, Prayer, the Mightiest Force in the World. He was concerned that just 6 years after fighting a Second World War in the 20th century, relations between the great powers were no better than before. But Frank had this incorrigible belief that if enough people would pray enough, world peace would be in no danger. Frank Laubeck is dead now, but I have no doubt that if he were alive, he would be encouraging ordinary people to pray. He would be saying that if enough people pray enough, peace can still be restored between Israel and Palestine more quickly than most people believe possible. I agree with Frank, but how do we get people to pray? I have a suggestion. There's an amazing amount of coverage of the war on television. Almost every time we turn on a news channel, there is something about the war. How about not just watching, but praying as we watch? It doesn't require much effort if we are motivated. That is the key. If we are motivated, we will pray. For those who have been injured in bomb explosions, for those trying to help, for families bereaved and all the pain they're going through, for children being brought up in that dangerous atmosphere, that reporting will be fair and balanced, that the conflict will not draw in many other nations, and that God may find a way to restore peace. All the topics for prayer are there on our television screens. We just need to pray as well as watch. And let's be encouraged by what Frank Laubeck would say if he were here today, that if enough people pray enough, peace can be restored between Israel and Palestine much more quickly than most people believe possible. After all, this war is being fought where Jesus walked when he lived on this earth, in the Holy Land. He must be looking down, passionately interested in what is happening, maybe heartbroken. We are approaching the anniversary of his birth on Christmas Day. Christmas is known as a season of peace and goodwill to all people. Jesus himself has a lovely title, Prince of Peace. We cannot change this situation between Israel and Palestine, but Jesus can. Could we make a commitment as we approach the anniversary of his birth? A commitment that every time we see something on TV about the war, we will pray. O little town of Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie. Above thy deep and dreamless sleep, the silent stars go by. Yet in thy dark streets shineth the everlasting light. The hopes and fears of all the year are met in thee tonight.
Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed this edition of Plain Talking. If you have enjoyed it, please subscribe to it and leave a review. Plain Talking is sponsored by The Plain Truth, a magazine of understanding. For more information, please visit plain-truth.org.uk. That's it for now, until the next podcast drops. So God bless you all from all of us at Plain Talking.